Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm T.J. O'Hara, the principal political analyst for IVN, the Independent Voter News. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guest today is Joe Collins, a Republican candidate for the United States House of Representatives in California's 43rd District. Mr. Collins is a licensed financial planning professional and a certified counselor for rape and sexual assault victims. He also was a chief petty officer in the United States Navy and served with distinction in Operation Iraqi Freedom. His combat experience might be particularly important because he's taking on 15-term Democratic stalwart Representative Maxine Waters, and he's going to need some real firepower. So I must say, I admire your courage, Joe. Welcome to Deconstructed.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Hey, can I tell you really quick? I was an E6. I was going on E7. I had made board. I got out the military before I was able to put E7 on. So I got out the military as a first class petty officer.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. And Joe, let's start with the basics. For those who don't know, where is California's 43rd District?
California 43rd District, they call it South LA. So we have Inglewood, South Central Watts. We have Hawthorne, Gardena, the airport area, Lomita, and Harbor City.
And obviously, you're a man who knows no fear. So tell us a little bit about your background and what inspired you to take on Representative Waters in a congressional district she's virtually owned for 30 years.
Yeah, like you said, she has been there for a very long time. I'm from South Central Los Angeles, born and raised. I grew up in 104th in Normandy. Whenever I was in high school, my house was actually shot up in a drive-by, which prompted my mother to move us to Texas. So I finished high school in Texas. And I joined the military in 2004. End of 2017, I got out the military because I wanted to get involved in politics, you know, and I actually started as a Republican presidential candidate so I can get familiar with politics. After learning a lot, the administration reached out to me and told me to choose a different path, and I chose to run against Maxine Waters. It's a lot of personal reasons why I chose to run against Maxine Waters, one being that there are a lot of homeless veterans on the street, and I used to be one of them. And it doesn't sit well with me for a person who sits in Congress to allow people who fought for this country to become homeless and not have the medical attention or the mental health treatment attention that they deserve, as well as the decline of the 43rd District.
Now, you've already taken an oath of office to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. You, from your background, seem to be inclined to defend those without a voice. And you're starting to speak to that with the homeless and so forth. Talk a little bit more about that inspiration.
In 2004, I did take an oath to defend the Constitution as well as the people of the United States of America. And that's something that I take very seriously. I served in the military. I did a boots on the ground tour in Iraq back in 2008 in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. And I've seen a lot, you know, and I think that people in America really don't understand the luxuries and freedoms that we have here compared to other countries. But they have this thing of making people feel like they're oppressed and making people feel like they're not cared about. I know in California, there's a lot of silent Republicans and people who are leaving the Democratic Party to become either Republicans or independents who are not having their voice heard. I mean, we have so many Democrats in office here in California that a lot of voices are silenced because they feel as though you vote all Democrat, now you do whatever we say do. And I don't think that's right at all.
So speaking on their behalf, you're an advocate for fair treatment and equality and respect for all citizens. How is that working today in California's 43rd district, in your opinion?
I believe that with me running in this race, it gives people a sense of hope. Maxine Waters has owned the district for a very long time, and she's done a great job of making people feel alienated from everything outside of California. We have a very poor district. And so with me being a voice for people who feel like they don't have a voice, a lot of people are starting to get bold. A lot of people are starting to get brave, and a lot of people are actually speaking out against the injustice that Maxine Waters has caused in our district for a very long time. So I think that people are actually starting to get motivated. They're starting to get excited that they're going to have a voice and new leadership in our community.
And if you were to be elected, what are the major goals that you would like to achieve for your district?
Well, I have a 5-point plan that I've put together. And I know a lot of people say stick to top three, but because our community is in such decline, we've been in bad shape for a very long time. The five things that I've put together are intertwined with each other, so you can't have one without the other. My first goal is to rebuild the district to support the expansion of small businesses and housing. The second thing I want to do is we need to overhaul our education system. We're going to be releasing our plans for a new education system, how we're going to overhaul our education system, as well as how we're going to start rebuilding new high schools in the district. We need to bring quality, high-paying jobs back to our district. That's one thing that we're lacking right now. And we also need to promote financial literacy. That's one of the biggest issues we have now. A lot of people do not know how to save. They don't know how to invest. They don't know how to build wealth. We also need to improve the relationship between the law enforcement and the communities. This is very important, especially when we're talking about rebuilding our community, bringing in new jobs, bringing in new housing. That relationship is going to be key to ensuring that people stay protected and our businesses stay protected. All of this together will influence and have a major impact on the homeless issue that we have right now.
Can you provide the audience with a little more depth relative? When you talk about rebuilding the district and improving the infrastructure and expanding housing and small business, how would you do that specifically?
Well, the president signed into law opportunity zones. Now, opportunity zones were created so people who live in a community can reinvest in their community to rebuild the community. Now, our community has been dilapidated for a very long time, and there is no economic development. There is no economic growth. So we will use the opportunity zones to bring quality jobs and businesses back, but we'll also use the opportunity zones to rebuild our community. This is going to be very, very important. This is much needed, too, to be honest with you, because a lot of our houses, a lot of our buildings are very old. Even when we talk about infrastructure, we can look at the roads, we can look at the sewer systems. All of the things that we have in South LA is very old, and we've been conditioned to believe that these things is normal and this is the best it's going to get. Well, I've joined the military. I lived across the United States. I've traveled across the world, and I can absolutely say that what we have going on here in South LA is not normal, and we deserve better.
We hear a lot of discussion around the opportunity zones, and on the conservative side, they praise the president. On the liberal side, they condemn it and say it's just a way for rich people to make money. What has your experience been, particularly in the 43rd District, with respect to opportunity zones? Is there a little truth to both sides, or is it being misspoken about by one or the other?
There is truth to both sides, but it's also misspoken by both sides as well. Opportunity Zones is a great program. It's supposed to allow the constituents who live in a district to reinvest in their own communities. The biggest issue that we have with Opportunity Zones, especially in Los Angeles County, is that the city council members are holding up the Opportunity Zone fund from people who are investing into the Opportunity Zone funds. $4.2 billion that are put aside and they're not being used to reinvest into the community. The city council members are trading projects with developers and allowing the developers to move in and utilize opportunity zones while not using the people who have already given money to invest in opportunity zones. So the Democrats say all the time, oh, is this the stunt? But on the flip side, the Democrats are using opportunity zones to allow developers to get rich.
Very interesting. Now, with the current unrest in the streets where we have, as some will frame them, predominantly peaceful protests, others will claim that they're riots. What's transpiring in the 43rd?
In the 43rd District, we have a lot of peaceful protests. We don't have people destroying communities here anymore. And I think the biggest reason why is because it's one thing to protest, but it's another thing to destroy people's property. Now, I can understand the emotions that comes along with the way media portray people getting killed by cops and this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, destroying buildings, destroying other people's personal property is not going to affect change. You know, go protest, but we also need to get bills in place. And I hate looking on TV and seeing a lot of Democrats call the protests peaceful. Meanwhile, buildings are burning, people are getting killed on a regular basis. We are so blessed in Los Angeles not to have those issues. It started after George Floyd died. They burned a couple buildings. They destroyed some property, but outside of that, we haven't had too much issues here, so we've been very grateful.
Well, Joe, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about your congressional race in California's 43rd district when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is Joe Collins, a Republican candidate for Congress in California's 43rd district, where he's taking on 15-term incumbent Maxine Waters. Joe, that's a pretty high mountain you're trying to climb in Representative Maxine Waters. Let's talk a little bit about why you're willing to take her on. She's been in office for 30 years in the district, and before that, she was in the California State Assembly. So she's been in office in your area for 44 consecutive years.
Mm-hmm.
What is your motivation to take on a challenge like that?
Well, it's time for Maxine Waters to go, to be honest with you. She's 82 years old. And, you know, I don't think anybody out there would ask their 82-year-old grandmother or great-grandmother to go represent the United States. So I'm not even understanding why she's still in office. I think what she should have did, it would have been a better idea, was to start training people to get involved in politics so they can take over for her. But that's something that she has not done. She's kind of power hungry. But I can tell you this, growing up in South LA and seeing where we are now, where we were back in the 90s when I was a kid, we are in worse shape now than we were then. I mean, then we just had high gang violence and, you know, high gang activity, no quality jobs. Now we have high gang activity, no quality jobs. Small businesses are being shut down. We have a high concentration of homeless people everywhere. And that's a testament of the leadership that she's been able to provide for the people of the 43rd district, you know, every single day. And I explain this to people all the time. How can you honestly support Maxine Waters or anybody who is supposed to represent you that is absolutely wealthy, you know, beyond measure when you're still poor, right? Because nobody in the 43rd district, very little people in the 43rd district who have enough savings to even survive through the COVID-19 shutdown that we're experiencing right now. And so she's been a terrible representative. I know she gets on TV and she hollers all type of insane things, impeach 45 and all the ignorance that she gives. Even when she was talking to the banks about college loans, and they were like, well, we don't provide federal loans anymore. We stopped doing that 10 years ago. You know, it's just, how can people continue to vote for this lady? So that's who I'm running against. And I think it's time for new leadership. It's time for fresh blood. It's time for someone new to get in office with new ideas who want to see the people progress in our city.
Does Maxine Waters live in the district? I know you do, and you obviously grew up there while she was already representing mm-hmm. the area. Does she live in the district?
No, Maxine Waters has three or four really beautiful houses. She has a house around the corner from the mayor's office in Hancock Park. She has a few houses down in Rancho Palos Verdes. She has a house in D.C., and her children have really nice houses all outside the district also. So, no, she doesn't live in the district. She's not even from Los Angeles. She's from St. Louis, Missouri. So I don't even know how she made it to L.A.
So help me understand. She's never received less than 71% in a federal election. She's received the last couple of times around 78% of the vote. Now, you've beaten mm-hmm. the person who ran against her the last two times, but I think the best that Mr. Navarro ever got was maybe 22 or 23% of the vote. How do you overcome that? But more importantly, how do you explain that?
Well, I would say this. Maxine Waters has never gotten 70% of the vote. She's gotten 70% of the vote from people who came out to vote. But when it comes to people who actually live in a district, she's only gotten about 26% of the vote. I mean, you talk about someone who gets 150,000 votes out of 750,000 people that live in a district. That's a very low number. What our goal has been on our campaign is voter outreach and creating new voters. You know, we have 400,000 people that are registered to vote. We just have to get 700,000 people motivated to vote. That's been our goal. So we are in the streets 24/7. We're doing a lot of great things for the community. We're very visible in the community. We're very visible on social media, the news, everywhere. And so it's been a hard race, but I'll tell you this. As a Republican, it's very hard to run in a D-plus 54 district. But everything that they said I couldn't do, I bought. So we've been beating the odds since we started this race. We raised almost $4 million. They told me they're not going to let me get on the TV, so we bought all the TV channels, so now we run advertisement. They told me I couldn't get on the radio, so we bought all the radios. Now they have to run my advertisement. They said I didn't have a high enough name ID, so I bought all the billboards, you know, and we're in a community. So it's worked out pretty well.
Now, you talk about Maxine Waters' vocal persistence and trying to be polite about it. I know in 1994, she was incessantly interrupting Representative Peter King to the point that the presiding member, Representative Carrie Meek, who happened to be a Democrat from Florida, threatened to have the Sergeant of Arms present her with the mace of the House of Representatives, which is a formal warning, if in fact Representative Waters didn't cease and desist from her unruly behavior. And this is the last time that threat was ever made, and she was actually suspended from the House for the remainder of the day. During 1996, during the Rodney King riots, I remember her going out. She coined the phrase, no justice, no peace. And she refused to talk about the riots that the area was incurring and preferred to recast them as a rebellion, saying that they were somewhat understandable.
Yeah.
Are the people in the district aware of that?
No, I don't think so. And you know what? Maxine Waters, she's a loudmouth nut job. You know, and I don't see how anybody can continue to represent someone whose whole goal is to be a disruption or a disturbance. I mean, you can get on TV and you can make a donkey of yourself and be a jerk all you want to, but at the end of the day, how is that rebuilding our communities? Even in 92, when she enticed those riots, she absolutely enticed those riots and she promised that she was going to rebuild that city. And she didn't do that. She didn't do anything. But every time there is some type of uproar, the first thing that she wants to do is she wants to get on camera and she wants to be in the middle and she wants to talk the trash and entice violence. She's been doing this for a very long time, and we're getting absolutely sick of it. You know, I don't want to hear Maxine Waters on the TV talking about these are peaceful riots and they deserve to have their buildings burned down. Maxine Waters is the person who makes the law. She makes the law. So as a lawmaker, how can you in good faith get on TV and talk about things need to change when you are the person who can affect change? I think it's absolutely idiotic, and people need to start seeing this stuff. They need to start seeing that she's been obnoxious for a very long time, and she's bitter.
One of the things I've always found interesting about her is in 2004, she was challenged because her relatives made more than $1 million working with people that she had supported. 2008, there was the ethics investigation into $12 million of TARP funds that got directed towards a bank in which her husband was a stockholder and former director. But what has always struck me as particularly interesting is that there's a liberal watchdog group, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, and they named Waters to its list of corrupt members of Congress in 2005, 2006, 2009, and 2011. Now, I can't recall if she's made it since then, but I found that to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Again, are the people in the district aware of that, that her own party is listing her as someone who's corrupt?
No, the people don't know that because she's never had a viable candidate run against her that people would actually listen to. Now, I'm running against her and people actually listen to me. When I talk about things, people actually listen. I talk about the economic decline or lack of economic development, people listen. When I talk about the homeless, people listen. And I want to talk about this as well. I'm just waiting for the right opportunity.
Well, Joe, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about your congressional race in California's 43rd district when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is Joe Collins, a Republican candidate for Congress in California's 43rd district, where he's taking on Representative Maxine Waters, who's held state or federal office in that area for 44 years. Joe, when we were finishing the last segment, we were talking about how you were reaching out to your district. What's the response been as you talk to them about economic issues and so forth? What's the depth of their interest and their thirst for knowledge?
Well, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from people in the community. And I think the reason why is because I'm someone they can relate to. I'm from South LA. I know the issues in South LA, you know, especially being born and raised there. I was able to get out, you know, because my mother, she did make a really great decision to move us out after our house was shot up in a drive-by and served 13 and a half years in the military. And I didn't leave the community behind. I actually came back to help make my community better. And so we get a lot of positive response. Of course, we're always going to have the trolls. You have the people who talk a lot of trash, they nitpick, they want to find everything wrong with you and with things that you're doing. But at the end of the day, you know, we're doing really well. We run surveys and polls from our campaign, and we have maybe about 45 to 50,000 people that has participated in our surveys and in our polls, and we run anywhere between 68 to 72% approval to remove Maxine Waters and replace her with myself. So I think that we're doing very well.
You bring up another interesting point. As you talked about, it's actually a relative minority of the community that has maintained Maxine Waters in office. When you reach out to the people in the streets, what is their impression of Maxine Waters?
It's funny because, you know, they used to like Maxine Waters back in the 90s, but now, you know, they talk to me in private and they say, we got to get rid of her. She doesn't do anything for anybody except for herself. I think the biggest thing that Maxine Waters has failed is, one, rebuilding a district and providing opportunities for people who live in the district, and two, broken promises. She breaks promises, she makes promises and doesn't keep them. She's just a terrible person.
What percentage of the potential electorate in your district views her positively versus neutral versus negatively at this point?
I would say, you know, it's really hard to tell right now. The older Black people who are used to voting for Maxine Waters because she what she done back in the days are the people who, you know, are positive or torn when it comes to Maxine Waters and the lack of her leadership. But the younger generation, you know, a lot of people are really not having it, especially the younger generation. I mean, everything is at the fingertips on the internet. And so they can get on the internet and Google Maxine Waters and see everything. And a lot of people are turned off by her, which is a plus. And creating new voters. You know, we create new voters because we have contact first. I'm young and people look up to me as a leader. They look up to me as someone who's made it and they want to try to imitate what success is. So, you know, I would say probably 20% of the district thinks by Maxine Waters, but that's because they know her, while the rest of the district is looking for something new.
What is your impression of how likely those people who are looking for change will actually come out and vote?
That's a good question. I don't like to count my chickens before they hatch. I'll let the number show on November.
That's a fair comment. That's always the safest way to go. I'll say that.
Yeah.
So I won't ask you for a specific prediction. I know you think you'll pull this off.
Absolutely.
Now let's talk about what you're actually doing in the community, because I've read your background. I've read some of the programs that you're involved in. You're doing things right now, win, lose, or draw, that will help your community. Can you speak to some of those?
Yep. So what I wanted to do whenever I hopped into this race was I wanted to work as if I was already in office. That way I can be prepared. But I also want to provide value and opportunity for the people who live in the district. And so some of the things that we've been able to accomplish, before the school shut down, I was working with the organization Hidden Pioneers, and we got sponsored by NASA. And we're going to take the programs with the emphasis on STEM and automotive transportation technology and start putting those in high schools. Now, we have a few high schools that we put those in northern Los Angeles County, and we were working our way down before COVID-19 started. We have an entrepreneurship course where we teach kids how to start businesses. We got it approved by CTE and the school board. We're going to be putting those into class as soon as the schools open back up. We have our food drives that we do 4 or 5 times a week throughout the communities, which has been absolutely awesome. A lot of people, they tell us, you know, I was struggling trying to figure out if I have to pay rent or if I'm going to go get food. But since you guys are here, you're giving us quality food. We really appreciate that. And we do our backpack drives now and back to school drives because we understand schools will be opening sometime within the next month or so. And we want our kids to be prepared. We understand their parents haven't been working. So, you know, just small things that we can do to be a blessing and to help our community is what we've been doing. We had a movie night. That was wonderful as well. It was free, you know. So these are a few things we've been able to do for the community.
Now, you're also engaging the community. You've done community cleanups and community gardening projects and so forth. How has that been received?
The community cleanups, people love it. We did it about 3 or 4 times. The first one we did with Anthony Cabasas with the Republican National Hispanic Assembly. That was great. That was early in September. Last September, we did that one. And so we just kept it going, cleaning up. I call it cleaning up Maxine Waters' mess. Right, because she's a representative, so this is her mess that we're cleaning up. But the people in the community, they love it when they see us. They come out and they get involved with us as well. We'll be doing another one, I think, next weekend or the weekend after. So it should be a great event. And people love it. They appreciate it. They actually see someone cares enough about the community to go pick up the trash.
Now, you also recently announced a $20,000 pledge to local churches and places of worship to support phase two guidelines by Governor Newsom. Why is that important to you and your district?
Well, the reason why that's important to me is because, one, my grandfather was a pastor. He was a pastor at Ambassadors for Christ in 104th and Normandy. It was the biggest black church before mega churches was really a thing out in California. And I saw my grandfather take care of the community on a regular basis. And I had another grandfather who was a pastor of Greater True Light, and that was near USC, and he took care of the community as well. So one thing that we understand, especially in a black and Latino community, even across the 43rd district within the white community, that churches are a staple of the community. Now, churches rely on people coming to church and paying tithe to sustain a church and be able to take care of the people who are less fortunate in the community. Now, since Governor Newsom shut down the state, he shut down the churches, our churches are failing, and I don't want that to happen. I need the churches to continue to take care of the people who are less fortunate. So I felt it was a good idea to do a $20,000 pledge to help the churches in our district stay afloat so they can continue to help people in our communities.
That's very generous and very kind of you. Now, you also do Real Talk Radio. You do KABC Late Night Wrap Up. You aren't trying to take my job from me, are you?
No, not at all. Here's the thing. So I have two radio shows. I have the Real Talk Radio on CRN, Digital Radio and TV Network, and that's on Saturday at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And then the Late Night Wrap Up on 790 KABC, Sundays at 9 p.m. The reason why I wanted to do the shows was because it's only so much you can do with so many places that you can visit in a short amount of time. So I figured that can be a one-stop shop where people can get a hold of me, they can hear me, we could talk about issues, they can call in, they can have direct access to me a few times a week, and I can't get everywhere. So I thought it was a really good idea. It's a great show. We have the number one show on 790 KABC right now. We talk about real issues, we're funny, but we're also real at the same time.
Well, congratulations on that. And Joe, in the limited amount of time we have left, where can our listeners go to learn more about you and your candidacy and get involved if they so choose?
Yeah, my website is joecollinsforcongress.com. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at collinsforcongress43 and Twitter at joecollins43rd.
Well, Joe Collins, you have quite a challenge ahead of you. You seem to truly care about the people in your district, California 43rd, and that may be your greatest strength. I wish you well, and I hope voters will listen to your ideas and judge you fairly. Joe, thank you again for joining me on Deconstructed.
Thank you. God bless.